Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The evacuation of Palestinian guerrillas continued today from West Beirut as the Lebanese parliament met and elected the new president of Lebanon. Both events were delayed, but not by much. Peter Sherman reports.
The Lebanese parliament gathered under tight security at a military academy east of Beirut and assembled a quorum 2.5 hours late, despite a boycott called by Muslim political leaders. On the second ballot, the parliamentarians elected the only declared candidate, 34-year-old Christian militia commander Bashir Gemayel, as Lebanon's next president to take office next month, the seventh Lebanese president since independence in 1943 and the youngest ever. Gemayel told reporters, "I hope that after today we can say that war is over and the period of peace and security has started." But leaders of Lebanon's Muslim majority who opposed Gemayel doubt he can bring the nation together. They resent his forces' open cooperation with the Israeli invaders ousting the Palestine Liberation Organization. Today's contingent of 1,000 PLO guerrillas withdrawing from West Beirut was delayed for an hour after a car bomb went off along their route to the port of Beirut. Israeli gunboats held up yesterday's departure for several hours, complaining that PLO forces were breaking the agreement by taking along vehicles and rocket grenades. Peter Sherman, CBS News, Beirut.
This is Bob Faugh in Jerusalem. The Begin government is annoyed by what happened yesterday. Officials blame the French and Lebanese forces for standing around and watching the PLO load jeeps, rocket launchers, women and children. But mostly they blame Ambassador Philip Habib, who on Saturday had been warned what to expect and who said the Israelis did nothing to prevent it. Nor is the government happy with the compromise worked out by Habib, which officials here say was accepted only because Israel wants the evacuation to proceed smoothly and does not want to undermine Habib's credibility. The view here is that the violation was blatant. There is no way to argue that a jeep is a personal weapon, sniffed one official. Jerusalem expected the PLO to test the agreement to see how far it could be stretched. What they should learn, said one foreign ministry source, is that we are not going to bend even a little bit, adding, if there are any other violations, we will have to interrupt things and correct them. It's that simple. Bob Paul, CBS News, Jerusalem.
This is Mark Phillips in Larnaca, Cyprus, where another act in the unfolding drama of the Beirut evacuation is being played out today. Over the weekend, the first contingent of PLO fighters passed through here on their way to Jordan and Iraq. And today, the controversy over military vehicles and equipment that threatened the evacuation yesterday is being resolved. It was agreed that the vehicles, loaded on a Cypriot ship, would be unloaded before the ferry got to Tunisia. Cyprus was to be the unloading point. But this morning, there was some delay as the question of who would take over the vehicles held things up. Other Cypriot ships are standing by to ferry more PLO fighters through here later in the week. And while those preparations are underway, the earlier group are settling in their new bases in Iraq and Jordan, where Doug Sefton picks up the story.
The Battle of Beirut is just a bad memory for the first batch of fighters from the Palestine Liberation Army. Today, they're with the families they left back in June when they were sent to join the battling in Lebanon. A government spokesman points out that Jordan is not granting asylum to refugees from Lebanon. The 265 fighters who returned yesterday have lived for years, and in some cases all of their lives, in Jordan. They fought in Lebanon as members of a battalion of the PLA, to all intents a regular military unit attached to the Jordanian army. The fighters have been granted a week's leave, after which they will be standing by for the next development in the seemingly never-ending Middle East crisis. Doug Sefton, CBS News, Amman.
Just one sign that the Middle East crisis is by no means over. The PLO's foreign minister, Farouk Kaddoumi, greeted some of the guerrillas when they reached Cyprus with the words, "This is not the end, but the beginning of the armed struggle." Officials in Washington, while keeping close watch on the situation in Beirut, are now turning their thoughts to future Middle East issues, summed up by Robert Pierpoint.
First, there is the presence of the remaining Syrian and PLO forces in northeast Lebanon and Israel's apparent determination to drive them out. To help solve that tricky problem and to get the Israelis to pull out of Lebanon entirely, as they have promised to do, the Reagan administration has decided to leave a high-level negotiating team in the area. Top troubleshooter Philip Habib may come home for a rest, but Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Morris Draper and other Mideast experts will remain in the region to expedite the next phase of the hoped-for withdrawal of all foreign forces from Lebanon. Meantime, the administration continues its pressure on Israel for greater flexibility in meeting the long-term problems of the Palestinians. Yesterday, Secretary of State Schultz openly called for Israel to withdraw from parts of the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Schultz also criticized the Israeli government for its handling of Palestinian politicians in occupied areas. Clear signals the Reagan administration believes Israel must be more willing to compromise if it really wants peace in the Mideast. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, Washington.
Secretary Schultz said that partial Israeli withdrawal from the West Bank and the Gaza Strip would be in compliance with UN Resolution 242. That resolution was approved after the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. It requires Israel to withdraw from territories seized in that conflict. Italy got a new government today, but as we hear from Richard Roth in Rome, it could be a carbon copy of the old government.
It is a new government in name only. The 28 ministers selected for cabinet posts today are the same as those who resigned 2 weeks ago when the government crisis began. The big difference today is for the record keepers. Italy now has its 42nd government since the end of World War II, the second government of Republican Prime Minister Giovanni Spadolini, and the second time since the war that Italy has had a prime minister who was not a member of the dominant Christian Democrat Party. Nothing else has changed. In order to govern, Spadolini will have to exercise discipline over a five-party coalition in Parliament. There was no realignment of the political players in Italy's longest-running drama, just an intermission, an uneasy truce worked out backstage, and a new start. And because the new government will soon be faced with the old problem of implementing an austerity program to curb a huge budget deficit, today there are some expressions of pessimism. One politician saying there's a gloominess in the air of a reconciliation without love. Richard Roth, CBS News, Rome.
Martial law authorities in Poland today warned they will permit no more protest demonstrations, no matter how small the demonstrations may be. Police patrols have been increased to underscore the warning, which actually is the latest of many such in recent weeks. Most of them have been defied in one way or another. The people of Swaziland, a landlocked African country next door to South Africa, are mourning their longtime ruler, 83-year-old King Sobhuza II, known as the Lion of the Mighty Claw. He died over the weekend after ruling for 61 years, longer than any monarch since Queen Victoria. King Sobhuza had an estimated 130 wives, 600 children, and nobody knows how many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. During his reign, he urged his subjects to honor their tribal customs while learning the ways of the West. President Reagan interrupts his California vacation today for a political errand. Neil Strauser reports from Santa Barbara.
Mr. Reagan comes down off his mountaintop today and returns to a movie set for the first time in his presidency. He travels by helicopter from his ranch to Los Angeles late today to attend a fundraising dinner for Pete Wilson, the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate from California. The dinner, which will gross about $1 million for the Wilson campaign, is being held on a Western-style movie set at 20th Century Fox Studios. Participants will include Roy Rogers and Dale Evans and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Wilson opposed the tax bill that passed the Congress last year, but that seems to be no problem for the president, who has made clear he would prefer a Pete Wilson anytime over a Jerry Brown, the California governor who is running as the Democratic candidate for the Senate seat. Mr. Reagan will stay on in Los Angeles to attend a reception tomorrow night for George Dukmejian, the Republican candidate for governor, before returning Wednesday morning to his ranch, where he's already begun his favorite projects of woodcutting and brush clearing. Neil Strauser, CBS News, with a presidential party in Santa Barbara.
Tom Bradley, the mayor of Los Angeles, is the Democratic candidate in the gubernatorial race. Acting Archbishop Arturo Rivera y Damas, the senior Roman Catholic prelate in El Salvador, charged yesterday that nearly 200 civilians have been killed by government forces and paramilitary units in the past 2 weeks of civil war. In Peru, more than 200 Maoist rebels yesterday attacked a provincial police station with submachine guns and dynamite. Authorities say six civil guards and 30 rebels were killed. The dollar declined slightly today in Tokyo, but it's holding firm against the major European currencies. Gold prices are off. The price was fixed in London at $381.75 an ounce, down about $6 from Friday.